Welcome to the Right Take Podcast, news, ideas, and conversations at the intersection of politics and culture, a project of the David Horowitz Freedom Center. I will be your host, Mark Tapson.
Greetings and welcome back to the Right Take Podcast. I am your host, Mark Tapson. As you know, if you've listened to the show enough, I am a homeschooling dad. I'm a huge advocate for homeschooling for those parents who are in a position to make it happen, which not everyone is. And I fully understand and respect the fact that for many, if not most parents, the circumstances just aren't manageable to homeschool. That having been said, I also urge every pair of parents to sit down and evaluate your circumstances and consider doing whatever is necessary to get your child's education under your control. And don't sell yourself short by saying, hey, I'm no teacher, I barely paid attention in school myself, I wouldn't know where to begin. Because the fact of the matter is that your child needs and deserves the kind of passionate dedication to his or her upbringing that only a parent can give. Not even the most committed teacher cares as much about your child as you do. And indeed, many of them today don't care about educating your child at all, but about indoctrinating him or her into a political activism that's designed to drive a wedge between that child and his or her parents. If you care about the intellectual, moral, and spiritual upbringing of your child or children, just make the commitment if at all possible, and you will find the path opening up before you as you go, as my wife and I did, and you will figure out how to make it work, and you will find that it not only benefits your children immeasurably more than consigning them to public schools or even most private schools in ways you didn't think possible or didn't even expect, and it will enrich your family life and strengthen those bonds beyond what most families will ever experience. And that is worth making every possible adjustment of your life and sacrifice to make it happen. The alternative is to risk turning the raising of your children over to the state and relinquishing one of the most important rights, arguably the most important right, that you have as a parent. Anyway, I could go on and on about this, but the point is that your right as a parent to have complete control over the kind of education you want your child or children to have and the kind of young man or woman that you want to guide them into being, that right is a sacred blessing of a free society. And keep in mind that there are those who crave the power to deny you that sacred blessing and to take control of the upbringing of your children. There are totalitarians who view your children as mere tools to indoctrinate and manipulate in order to acquire and maintain permanent political power. That is a real-world evil that all parents, homeschooling or not, must be on guard against and must resist with everything they've got. I raise this point because I read an article the other day about a very concerning issue which I want to help bring attention to, and so I've brought the author of that article on the show today to dive into this issue and talk about ways that parents, especially homeschooling parents, can push back against this global threat. So stay tuned. You don't want to miss this conversation. And don't forget to subscribe to The Right Take if you don't already, so you don't miss any of the compelling conversations we're having here. Don't touch that dial. My guest today at the intersection of politics and culture is an award-winning journalist, educator, is the author of several books, and he's the CEO of Liberty Sentinel Media. He's all over the media, in fact, including hosting several radio, TV, and online shows. He's either a fellow or works in some leadership capacity for several organizations, and like me, he is the homeschooling dad of a whole gaggle of kids, so I might ask him for some advice later about how he juggles it all, because I'm dropping a few balls. Alex Newman, welcome to the Right Take Podcast.
It's an honor and a pleasure. Thank you very much for having me, Mark.
Great to have you here, Alex. Your work focuses a lot on education, which is a topic near and dear to my heart, but one that's also critical to the flourishing of society and civilization. Before we dive into all that first, though, tell us what goes on at your Liberty Sentinel Media.
Well, thank you, Mark. So we do a lot of different things. The most publicly accessible, public-facing thing that we do is a newsletter that we send out three times a week, absolutely free to whoever wants it. We also produce a number of different shows. We do several TV and radio programs, some podcasts, different things like that. And then we produce journalistic content for a very wide range of clients across the United States and around the world. So we've got a wonderful little team here. And our goal really is to glorify God by exposing evildoers, shining the light on the truth, and bringing accurate and useful information to people so they can make better decisions.
Excellent. Good to know. I also want to ask you about your most recent book, Indoctrinating Our Children to Death. In addition to being endorsed by everybody from Pete Hegseth to Moms for Liberty, the book I've noticed has a very impressive 4.8 out of 5 rating on Amazon. Can you tell us a bit about the book?
Well, thank you, Mark. This really was the culmination of 15 years of research into what was happening to our children in the so-called public school system. So what I really wanted to do was address a few of the critical myths that I think are preventing us from solving this problem. I mean, it's a solvable problem, but we have to first have an accurate diagnosis. And I think the first thing that people need to understand is the history, because as long as we keep thinking that the system is broken and that some sort of reform or combination of reforms will fix it, we're going to be missing the point. We need to understand that the people who built this system, literally from the first guy to seriously propose it to the people who designed it, who imported it from Prussia, all of them had a very different objective than, say, normal people would when it comes to thinking about education. And so I went through the history of that. You know, who were the people who created this system? Why did they create it? What did they themselves say about what they were doing? What did education look like before the government took it over, starting in about the mid-1800s? And what are they doing today? And where is this all going? And so I actually do a big section on where the UN is trying to take education globally, which I know is our subject for today. But it's just a broad look at what is happening in the government school system. I do believe, Mark, that it is the most critical issue that we're facing because it transcends all the other ones, right? If they capture the hearts and minds of 85% of the next generation, all the other battles that we're fighting are essentially done for already.
Exactly right. I agree with you totally on that. And let's talk about an article that you wrote recently, which is related to all this, for the Epoch Times, which caught my attention. You kicked that article off with a pretty eye-opening statement, quote, "The United Nations just put a giant target on the backs of homeschoolers worldwide," unquote. Now, as if homeschoolers don't have enough to be vigilant about where our own state and federal governments are concerned, why should homeschooling families in America be concerned about the UN?
Well, the UN has made very clear that they are coming for our parental rights and they are coming for our educational freedom. They do not want us to be able to educate our children at home with a biblical worldview. They do not want us to be able to do the things that the homeschooling community in America has taken for granted for decades. And for a long time, it was kind of in sugar-coated language. You know, they used nice marketing terms to kind of conceal the real nature of what they were doing. But now they've just come out of the closet and said homeschooling, if governments decide to allow it at all, must be controlled and regulated by government, must include evaluations, registration, home inspections, home visits, control of education content. So the UN actually claims that this is an obligation under international law. And I can tell you what this looks like. I first came across this 15 years ago living in Sweden, not on purpose, but I was living there, and they banned homeschooling, and they forced every private school in the country that was taking government money, which at that point was virtually every single one, to teach the government curriculum, which required, you know, gender ideology starting in kindergarten and first grade and all the rest of it. So, and if you listen to what they say over and over again, they say, well, this is an obligation under international human rights law. So we have to take this threat seriously. America's not Sweden, right? We're not going to move that quickly in that direction. But they have put a target on our backs, and they fully intend to eliminate all genuine choice.
And about this human rights issue, tell us about the Convention on the Rights of the Child, what that's all about, and why it seeks to shift authority from parents to these international bureaucrats.
This is, I believe, one of the most dangerous UN agreements in existence today. And that's saying something, because there are a lot of dangerous UN agreements. I mean, and most of them are packaged again in nice language. You know, it's about eliminating racism. It's about eliminating discrimination. It's about equal rights for women. So, you know, they always come up with nice pretexts for this. And of course, we all agree that children ought to have rights, right? Nobody should be killing children. Nobody should be abusing children. I mean, we all, I think, have an inherent sense of, well, of course children have rights, right? But when you read the text of this agreement, and I should start off by saying, Mark, that the United States government, thankfully, has not ratified this agreement yet. We're one of the very few. I believe there's the United States and Somalia that have not ratified this yet. And the UN loves to point that out as if we were Somalia. But I would say of all the things that are in there that are so dangerous, the most important is just what you hinted at. It shifts authority and responsibility over the development, the upbringing, the education of children from parents to the state. And it does it using a very nefarious mechanism. It says that all the decisions for children must be made in the best interests of the child. And again, that's something that I think normal people would say, well, of course we ought to make decisions in the best interests of the child. Here's where it gets tricky, though. In the UN vision, the government will determine what is in the best interest of the child, yes, and not the parents. And of course, the government very often, if you know anything about history, has different ideas on what might be in the best interest of the child than parents do.
Yeah, the human rights issue is kind of the pretext for this, but what is the actual reason? What's the underlying reason for the UN to frame parental choice as a threat to global educational standards?
Well, they've been very clear that they want every child in every school in every country to learn from, as they put it in their own agreements, the same standards of learning, essentially the UN's vision of education. And they make this clear, and they have made this clear, going all the way back to the beginning. So if we look at this through a human rights lens, which is what UNESCO does in this recent report that we're talking about, they claim that international human rights law imposes obligations on states with respect to the education of children. And if you agree with the legitimacy of so-called international human rights law, which I would question. I don't think it's legitimate. I don't think the U.S. government has the power to do some of these things, and so they certainly can't delegate that power to the United Nations or agree to take on unconstitutional powers. But be that as it may, the UN claims that international human rights law requires these things. And so you go to the foundational human rights instrument of the United Nations, which is the UN Declaration, Universal Declaration on Human Rights. It's very clear, all right? If you go to Article 26, it says education shall be compulsory. So they have a very different understanding of rights than, say, our founding fathers did. Then they go on to say that education shall further the activities of the United Nations. And so you don't have to do a lot of dot connecting to figure out if you're not giving your children a compulsory education that furthers the activities of the United Nations. Under the plain reading of international human rights law, especially the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, you're depriving your child of his or her human right to an education that furthers the activities of the UN. Of course, you mentioned I homeschool. I've got six children. I wouldn't hand them over to the government if you put a gun to my head. We don't further the activities of the UN in our homeschooling. In fact, we teach our children the truth about the UN. And so under this very perverted understanding of human rights, the UN could say, hey, Alex Newman is denying his children's human right to an education that furthers the activities of the UN. That would make me a human rights violator, which, of course, in the international lexicon of the UN is a very serious offense.
Yeah. UNESCO, which is, I guess that is the branch of the United Nations that carries out their educational mission, you point out in the article that it's long been dominated by card-carrying communists. And like Marxists everywhere, they believe children should be raised by the state. I was kind of shocked, though, to read in your article that the top UN official that's involved in this push comes from, wait for it, North Korea. That can't be a good sign, can it?
No, I mean, this would be like a good parody, right? The unfortunate thing is that it's true. So I looked in the acknowledgments of this report, and it says it was prepared under the supervision of an individual named Chang Guang Chol, who I had not heard of, honestly, and I follow the UNESCO very closely. I don't think there's any journalist in the world who has reported more on UNESCO than I have, but I had not heard of him. But he's a very prominent individual there. He's the head of the education policy section at UNESCO. So that's a very important job. And I did some background checking on him, and you could tell they're kind of ashamed to admit it. You have to kind of connect the dots because you read the university that he got his degree from is, of course, a North Korean university. Then they say he served in the education ministry in his home country, which, of course, was North Korea. So you have to do a little bit of dot connecting there. They obviously don't want to advertise this everywhere, but he is a North Korean communist. And just like the Chinese communists, when they go work in these international institutions, their primary loyalty remains to their home government and to their home party. And they've made this very clear over the years. The Communist Chinese Party actually arrested Meng Hongwei, the head of Interpol. And they said in their own propaganda outlets that one of the reasons was he was refusing to obey the orders of the Chinese Communist Party. So these people are very, very serious. They operate at all levels of the UN. And I thought it was very fitting that a North Korean communist oversaw the report by the UN outlining why we need to protect the quote-unquote human rights of homeschooled children.
Mm-hmm. If UNESCO's policies manage somehow to gain traction here, what could parents expect in terms of surveillance or penalties or forced compliance? What are the mechanics of it? How would the UN impose mandatory state-approved schooling?
Well, there's several ways. And if you read the report, the most approving remarks are actually directed at governments like the German government, which has criminalized home education since Adolf Hitler, the first government in the world to criminalize homeschooling. They sing the praises of Sweden. They sing the praises of France, which essentially has banned homeschooling, although not officially, but they have essentially made it illegal. That's what gets the most approval. But as you read in there about what policies they claim are required under international human rights law and these various agreements, they talk about mandatory registration of homeschoolers as if we were sex offenders. And many states do not require registration. There are children. Why should we have to report them to the government? They want to require mandatory evaluations to make sure that parents are teaching what the government demands be taught. They want mandatory home visits, so you would have a bureaucrat showing up at your house. And to go back for a moment to the Convention on the Rights of the Child, the CRC, when this was implemented in Scotland, one of the early governments to implement this, the Scottish Parliament passed a law on this issue. And what it did, and they specifically said, we're implementing the Convention on the Rights of the Child, it assigned a named person, a government bureaucrat, to oversee the development, the upbringing, and the education of every child in Scotland from birth until adulthood. And so that's their vision over the long term, is total government control. They actually had something, Mark, that they call the World Core Curriculum. And the guy who wrote, this was on UNESCO's website for years. The guy who wrote it said it should be taught to every child in every school in every country. His name was Robert Mueller. He was the Assistant Secretary General of the UN. He's often called the father of global education. And just to give people a sense of the worldview perspective that these people are coming from, I have the foreword to the teacher's manual of this World Core Curriculum. And he brags in there that it's based on the teachings of Alice Bailey and the Tibetan teacher Jeval Kuhl, which I recognize will be meaningless to almost every American, but it'll take you all of two clicks on the internet to figure out what's going on here. Alice Bailey was the founder of the Lucifer Publishing Company. True story, right? Today it's called the Lucius Trust because Lucifer Publishing was a little bit too inflammatory.
Yes. And this Tibetan knows.
Right. And this Tibetan teacher, again, you could just look this up, is not a Tibetan or a teacher or even a human being. Alice Bailey claimed to be communicating with spirit friends. She called them ascended masters. And this was the chief of the ascended masters who were helping give her insights into the coming new age. And she wrote a book on this, Education in the New Age, where she channeled this spiritual entity, Jeval Kuhl. And I encourage people to look at it. I mean, I've got a copy in my office. It says we need to have a world government. You know, the big obstacle to this new age is what she calls the great heresy of separateness, which Christians and Jews know as be holy, for I am holy, saith the Lord, right? So I mean, long term, that is their vision. And if you just look at the people who are guiding these institutions, if you look at the statements that they make, the reports that they put out, it becomes very clear.
And along those lines, predictably, religious homeschoolers are especially singled out for UN condemnation, with the UN claiming that, quote, dogmatic approaches may stir up intolerance, unquote. So a major aim of this UN push is to subvert Christian education, isn't it?
There's no question about it. And I've watched this not just through UNESCO, but through a whole range of UN agencies and para-UN agencies. Like there's the Religions for Peace, which calls itself the UN of Religions. And they say all religions are member. You know, the UN has member governments. We have member religions. All religious institutions, says the leader of this, Dr. Azza Karam. And the only thing you can't say there is really interesting. You can say pretty much anything. You could worship a rock. You could worship a demon, a tree, Mother Earth, Allah, you know, whatever you want. The only thing, and you can even say Jesus is cool, Jesus is great, whatever. The only thing you can't say is Jesus is the way. And so to bring it back to this human rights report on homeschooling from UNESCO, they specifically take, they say, you know, if you want to do one religion class or whatever, like, that's okay. But those people who try to teach all subjects through the lens of their faith, those are the ones who are problematic. And that would apply to essentially every Christian school in America that's worth its salt. And this report specifically calls for the regulation of private education providers. And it would apply to the vast majority of Christian homeschoolers who seek to instill a biblical worldview in their children.
Yeah, so the UN's disdain for parental choice in education undermines parents not just academically, but also in terms of the moral and cultural values that they want to instill in their kids, doesn't it?
Yes, there's no question about it. And that is the objective. We need to be clear. Early on, when UNESCO was first formed, they were actually more open about that than they are today. They put out some pamphlets in the early 1950s where they specifically declared as one of their goals to undermine the influence of parents because they believed parents were kind of backwards, clinging to these old ideas. And the way they put it, they say, we're building peace into the minds of men. And I think superficially that has kind of an appeal because we all want peace. But I think it needs to be understood that when the UN and the people who've been running the UN and these UN agencies for so long talk about peace, they don't mean what we think of as peace, like the absence of war. They mean the absence of all resistance to their agenda. That's when we'll finally have peace. And by building it into the minds of men, what they really mean, of course, is indoctrinating these children. And this is clear in the report, right? You have to give children global citizenship. You have to give them respect for diversity. You have to give them respect for gender equality, which means something very different in the UN lexicon, right? Get the moms out of the house, get them in the workforce so the children can be in the government's hands. So they're very explicit about the kind of values they want taught to your children. And they're very explicit about the fact that if you don't teach those, you're a problem.
And this goes all the way back at least to Karl Marx, if not before, but Karl Marx explicitly called for liberating women from the slavery of motherhood and being a wife and getting her out into the workforce and then having the children raised collectively by the state. So this is just Marxist to the core, isn't it?
It absolutely is. And of course, Marx wasn't really about the liberation of women. He just understood that the sooner we can get the family destroyed and children in government brainwash camps, the sooner we can indoctrinate them properly to become good little revolutionaries. And so as you read this, you know, they don't call it the slavery of motherhood. They have a different term for it that I think they used a focus group to come up with. That is unpaid care work, right? Oh, the poor mothers, they're subjected to all this unpaid care work while the dad is out earning money for the family. And they actually present this as a terrible thing that needs to be solved. They say it's mandatory that this be dealt with by governments because they say it reinforces negative gender roles and gender stereotypes in the minds of the children. So they certainly would not approve of my home. You know, my wife stays home. I work to pay our bills. And, you know, that's the very essence of what the UN says in this report must be stopped.
Yes, my situation is the same. Call me crazy, Alex, but doesn't this all sound pretty totalitarian?
It is absolutely totalitarian. And, you know, this has been clear for a long time. The current director general of UNESCO is a socialist, an actual member of the Socialist Party. But right before her, there was a lady called Irina Bokova. And she and I have never talked, but she has made clear that she hates me with a passion. She has smeared me in multiple European newspapers. She's called me a fascist, which, you know, I wonder if she really knows what that means. But a little bit of background on this lady. She's a card-carrying member of the Bulgarian Communist Party, which has since been rebranded the Bulgarian Socialist Party. Her dad was on the Politburo. She was foreign minister in this regime while it was slaughtering hundreds of thousands of innocent people under the guise of bringing about true communism. Communist utopia. So these are the kinds of people who end up in charge. They've got multiple Chinese Communist Party members within UNESCO. You've got, as we pointed out, a North Korean communist running the education policy section. These are totalitarians. They've been raised in totalitarian systems. They don't know anything other than totalitarianism. And they look at what happens in America, where parents have freedom and parents have rights and we have free speech and freedom of religion. And they're appalled by this. And they claim that the UN must fix it.
So these globalist progressives, they view homeschooling parents not so much a threat to educational standards, as they claim, but as a threat to actually the globalists themselves and this all-consuming lust for power and control that they have.
Clearly. And, you know, the data on this is very clear. One of the glaring omissions in this report, Mark, is the data on homeschooling. There's just one throwaway remark in there, that there are methodological flaws in the 40 years of studies and research that have been done on the homeschooling community. You know, I think if you want to debunk 40 years worth of research and studies consistently showing that homeschoolers do way better academically, way better socially, way better later in life, they get better jobs, they get paid more, they're more tolerant, they're more active in their communities. Yes. You can't just say there are methodological flaws and just throw it all out. They don't even mention this research. They don't even mention the repository of this research, the National Home Education Research Institute, because it undermines all of their claims. They want to portray homeschooling as a threat to what they call the human right to education, not realizing that anybody who knows the facts on this, anybody who's looked at the data, would know it's just the opposite, right? The government is failing in every way to educate children, according to their own numbers. Less than one-third of the victims of the government schools in the United States are even proficient in any core subject. Now, you might say that, you might say, if you believed in this stuff, would quote-unquote violate the human right to education. But that's not the case with homeschoolers. Homeschoolers are literate. They're very good at math. They know history. They know science. So clearly, this is not about making sure children are getting a decent education. Clearly, this is about something else.
How much of a barrier to the UN's agenda is the U.S. Constitution?
Well, I think interpreted properly, the Constitution is a brick wall that is essentially impenetrable, right? Because if you just do a basic analysis of the U.S. Constitution, if you just put it in the context in which it was written, if you read the things that the people who wrote it said, the U.S. Constitution is a delegation of a few defined powers to an agent, the federal government, by we the people, and of course by the states, which are the ones who came together, representatives of the states, in this convention that created the Constitution. And they delegated, again, a few powers. Most of them you can read in Article 1, Section 8. You could run a post office, you can operate a navy, you know, protect intellectual property, please. They can do a few things, foreign relations with other nations, with the Indian tribes. There's nothing in there delegating even a scintilla of authority over education or parental rights or anything else like that. And so even in its most plain reading, and the Founding Fathers understood that this was clear without any amendments. But just to be super sure that 250 years from now, when you know, people are looking at this, they don't get any dumb ideas, they went in and they put the 10th Amendment that said, you know, all the powers not specifically delegated to the United States government are reserved for the states and for the people. So the federal government does not have the powers that the UN is demanding that it exercise. And that is crystal clear. Our jurisprudence supports that. I mean, Thomas Jefferson talked about this, because there's what I would argue is a very dangerous notion, the idea that treaties are on par with the Constitution. Hmm. Now, treaties are, according to Article 6, part of the supreme law of the land, but they are not the supreme law of the land if they conflict with the Constitution. Just like federal statutes, they have to be made, it says in the Constitution, in pursuance thereof. In other words, if they're not made in pursuance thereof, if they're not constitutional, even Alexander Hamilton, the worst of the federal supremacists among our founding fathers, said that's null and void. It has no power. And so when the federal government signs some UN agreement that says, you know, we're going to regulate homeschooling or we're going to regulate education, they don't have the power to enforce that. And Thomas Jefferson made that clear in a letter to a U.S. senator when he was president. Even the U.S. Supreme Court has upheld this as recently as 1957 in the case of Reed versus Covert. They said, no, international treaties do not trump the Constitution. The federal government cannot grant itself new powers by signing up to a treaty. Otherwise, what would be the point of having a constitution? So if the feds want these powers, we have a way to do that. We can go into Article 5. We got two different ways we can amend the U.S. Constitution, and they can then make their sales pitch to the American people. My guess is they're not going to go for it.
But the United Nations isn't going to just throw up its hands in terms of dealing with our Constitution. They still have workarounds, don't they, or ways that they can pursue their agenda in a slightly more subversive way?
Absolutely. And UNESCO is a really clear example of this, Mark. So Donald Trump has already announced that we are withdrawing from UNESCO. Again, this will be the third time that the United States has withdrawn from UNESCO. first during Reagan, then during the first Trump administration. Now we're withdrawing again during the second Trump administration. And almost right away, when the administration announced this, the head of UNESCO, again, a socialist, Audrey Azoulay, she comes out and puts out a statement and says, oh, well, you know, that's all right. We'll welcome you back as soon as you're ready to join. And by the way, we're going to keep working with our American partners. And she lists, you know, publishers, state and local agencies, universities. So they're basically telling us, we don't care if you don't want to be a member of UNESCO. We're going to keep influencing the education that your children are receiving. And if you don't like it, kick rocks. So this is a very, very dangerous attitude from the United Nations. And I hope Trump will take this and really get serious about this. That's completely unacceptable.
Yes. As you noted, Trump has disengaged from UNESCO, but that could just change with the next Democrat administration, couldn't it?
That's exactly what happened after the first time Trump was president, right? Trump got us out, and I'm very grateful for that. And Joe Biden came into office and very shortly thereafter announced that we would be rejoining UNESCO. And not only rejoining UNESCO, we'd be paying arrears. We'd be giving them all the money that they would have received if we had not decided to take these actions. So I think we actually need Congress to clarify here. I don't believe that Biden had the legitimate authority to just reengage with UNESCO on a whim. I think that should require an act of Congress at the very least, if not proper ratification by the U.S. Senate. So I think Congress really needs to get involved here. I've spoken with several members of Congress about this issue. We know there's a problem here, and let's hope that the Trump administration will put some pressure on lawmakers to get this enshrined in federal law.
Yeah, excellent. Well, all of this is very alarming, but most parents are not homeschoolers. And I think it might be tempting for those parents who aren't to shrug this off and say, well, this doesn't really affect me and my kids, so it's not that urgent. But this is an issue that affects all parents, isn't it?
Oh, it absolutely is. And they've been telling us this very clearly, right? The UN Special Rapporteur on the Human Right to Education, a Pakistani lady named Farida Shahid, she just did an investigation of the United States, especially our education system, and concluded that Florida and Texas were in the wrong for trying to protect children from the indoctrination. And these are public school kids, okay? She's saying you cannot ban these perverted, filthy, obscene books that if I were to give to a child, I would be thrown in prison for. She also said explicitly that private schools must obey as well. I can actually quote from her report. She says these standards that are outlined that all private sector providers must adhere to in accordance with the right to quality education. So they're very open about this. They've got UN agreements going back decades, making clear that all children should be learning from the same standards of learning. So this applies to your government-schooled children, your private-schooled children, and your homeschooled children. And we need to recognize that even beyond education, this is a direct assault on your God-given parental rights to oversee the development, the upbringing, the faith, the values of your child while they are under your roof. So this is an attack on some of the most fundamental freedoms that we have. And at this point, they're just out in the open, spitting in our face, and we cannot accept this any longer.
Yes, agreed. Your article at the Epoch Times calls for parents to resist this. What practical steps can homeschooling parents, or any parents actually, take today to safeguard their rights against this creeping globalist overreach?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I believe maybe one of the most significant things that we've talked about so far in this interview, full of significant things. And so I would urge parents, first of all, to make the right decision about the education of your children. If you are still subjecting your children to dangerous indoctrination, now would be a real good time to change course. Yesterday would have been better, but better late than never. Secondly, once you've made that right decision, we have to recognize that these totalitarians will not rest until they have control of our children. And so I would urge people to get involved somehow. You know, the basics, you know, if you're a homeschooler, join Homeschool Legal Defense Association. Join with your state organization that protects the rights of homeschoolers. These are very influential groups that will protect you, that will fight for you in the legislature. Absolutely critical. There are ministries that are doing great work on this front. I'm a fellow with Classical Conversations. They've got a whole operation that engages with policymakers at the state and federal level to try to protect our freedom. We do need to become well-informed. So I would urge people to get access to good news sources. I serve as senior editor at The New American. I serve as a contributor to The Epoch Times. You can get our free newsletter. You can listen to all the great stuff that David Horowitz's Freedom Center puts out. You know, you need to have good information in these confusing times because the media is to put it bluntly, lying to us and deceiving us. And finally, we need to engage in the political process. The totalitarians are working through the political process to try to take away our rights. We need to work through the political process to try to preserve our rights. And it's more important now than ever.
I agree. I think it's easy these days for conservatives to feel like, well, we've got the political and cultural momentum these days with Trump in office. And so we can just kind of sit back and enjoy the ride. But I think we have to maintain this kind of eternal vigilance, especially where our children are concerned, because that, as you've pointed out, that's the primary target of these totalitarians. Alex, how can people best keep up with what you are writing and working on?
Well, thank you, Mark. The easiest way is just on our website, libertysentinel.org. The newsletter, as I mentioned, is absolutely free. They can follow us on X. It's AlexNewman_JOU for journalism. Also, you can follow Liberty Sent, which is Liberty Sentinel. I do serve as senior editor at The New American, is one of many publications I work with. They have the free daily headlines, great source of information. I do a number of different shows that you can all find through libertysentinel.org. And then, of course, the Epoch Times, a lot of other places. I would encourage people to, again, check all of those out and just, you know, try to stay well informed, because these issues are really, really critical. And unfortunately, there's not a lot of people covering them.
Yes, good to know. Listeners, I urge you to check out Alex's work because it is so vital. Alex Newman, thanks for joining us at The Right Take. Keep up the great work.
Thank you so much for having me, Mark. It's been an honor and a pleasure.
And thank you, listeners, for tuning in. Don't forget to subscribe to The Right Take if you haven't already. And if you like what you hear, please leave that positive review. Be seeing you.